The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early.
The wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, a song by Gordon Lightfoot back in 1976, made it to number 2 on the Billboard charts and stayed there for a long time. I remember this song when we were kids, but I never gave it much thought until I read my April book of the month, The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which I finished over spring break vacation.
This song haunted me as a kid.
Did it?
Yeah, I thought it was just the tone of the
it's
song.
Creepy sounding.
When you do listen to the lyrics, even as a kid, I thought, oh man, everyone's gone? They didn't make it? Holy cow.
In this book, they spend at least a chapter plus on the song. Mm. And the Edmund Fitzgerald was something that Gordon Lightfoot became obsessed with. He read about the wreck in Newsweek magazine. They did a really short blurb about it, and he read it and thought, wow, this deserves more than a short blurb. 29 men died in this shipwreck on the Great Lakes. And he was from Canada, so he was very familiar with the region. He was always kind of obsessed with shipping and the lakes, and so he started writing this song. But he never wanted to put it on an album. He never wanted to release it because he never felt like he could do justice to the sailors and the families and thought it would be controversial. And so he was recording his album with his band, and they're in the studio, and they said, hey, why don't we give this wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald a try? We're in the studio. We have an extra day on the, we're done with the album. We've rented the studio for an extra day, so let's do it. So they played it, and then he wasn't sure if that was the right one. So they played it again, they played it again, they played it again, played it again. And they did it about 8 or 10 times, and then they all agreed the first take was the best. So this song, the way you hear it, the song that made it to number 2 on the charts, is the first time, not that they recorded it, it's the first time the band ever played it together.
Whoa, they nailed it.
Didn't they nail it? They had never played it together, and the drummer didn't even really know when to come in. Gordon Lightfoot just kind of gave him a nod, and the drummer kicked in, and the guitar players didn't really know what to do, but they produced this gem, a song that I never thought much about, but now, like Gordon Lightfoot, I am obsessed with the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald after reading The Gales of November.
What a crazy story.
It's my April book of the month, and I haven't reviewed my February and March books yet, but I will do that probably later this week. But I want to talk about this because I just finished it a few days ago, and it's so fresh in my mind, and it has made an impact in a way that few books that I've recently read have. Thanks to Bob Sturm from The Hardline for recommending this to me, and a couple of other P1s also recommended it because they read it and they loved it. And it was written by John Bacon, The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's a New York Times bestseller, and I highly recommend this book. I had just kind of known the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald was a big ship that sank on the Great Lakes. And I knew a little bit of other details, but not much. So I was anxious to read about the details, but what I found out in this book is that the author wants to tell the story and make it really, really personal. 29 men died on this ship that night, November 10th, 1975. I didn't realize this. The Great Lakes are so treacherous. 30,000 sailors have died on the Great Lakes.
30,000?
30,000 over the years in the history of America. 30,000 sailors are at the bottom of the Great Lakes.
They're like small oceans, and yeah, when those storms roll in there, We used to live on Lake Michigan, or just off of Lake Michigan, and man, those waves are like the ocean.
Yeah. And I was really interested in the details of the shipwreck, but the author doesn't get to the shipwreck until you're 240 pages into the 400-page book.
Mm.
The first 240 pages are spent telling you about each of the 29 men,
wow,
what their personalities were like, what their backgrounds were like, their families, their wives, their brothers, their kids, their upbringing. It's fascinating to read about these guys that you don't know any of their names, but having read this book now, I feel like they're all family. I feel like I know all these intimate details about these guys, and all of these guys are working class sailors.
Just trying to make a living.
Yeah, almost all of them from the Great Lakes region. They all come from New York, Ohio, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin. One from California, one I think from the South, but they're all just working class guys, and they range in age from 65 to 21. And the Edmund Fitzgerald was the ship of the Great Lakes. And this book also did a great job of painting the history of the Great Lakes, which I didn't really know much about. I could name the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
I knew where they were. I knew what states bordered them and the big port cities. But for example, he goes into the history of Detroit and Toledo and all of these port towns or cities. And you don't realize this because for our entire life, Detroit has been a beaten down city. But when Henry Ford got the Model T up and running and they started really making cars in big numbers, well, that was happening in Detroit. And in the 50s, and in particular, the post-World War II boom,
mm-hmm,
for the economy here in America. And it was so centered around the automobile because, you know, in the 50s, everybody had to have a car or two. And so Detroit was just churning out these cars. Well, they needed the iron ore to make these cars, and the iron ore was mined all around the Great Lakes, and the most efficient way to ship that iron ore to the auto plants was on a boat.
Yeah.
Not a train, not a truck. It was on a boat because the Edmund Fitzgerald, for example, carried 26 million tons of iron ore.
26 million.
On each voyage, tons. 26 million tons.
Wait, is that right? 26 million tons?
26 million tons. Jeez. That is correct. Lightfoot even referenced that. One of the lines is 26 million tons more than she weighed empty. That's how much it carried. So they would carry this iron ore from Duluth and other ports down to Detroit and Toledo. So in the 50s, Detroit was the place in America.
Yeah.
It was booming.
The heartbeat of, yeah.
It absolutely was the heartbeat of America.
Yeah.
And he even talks in the book about how the sports scene in Detroit was booming. The Lions were winning NFL titles, which we can't imagine now.
No.
The Red Wings were winning the Cup. The Tigers won a couple World Series. Detroit was the place. It was thriving. And even places like Toledo on the northern shore of Ohio, Toledo was thriving because it was this major seaport. It's where, you know, some cars were made and iron ore was delivered. And so Toledo had this incredible cultural district. They had opera. They had museums. They had the arts. They had incredible restaurants. And in our lifetime, Toledo has always been a punchline.
Right.
Like, yeah, I hate where I live, but at least I don't live in Toledo.
Yeah.
But back in the 50s, because of the shipping on the Great Lakes, Toledo was one of the heartbeats of America.
So with all the ore that they had to haul, did it start in Duluth?
Yes. So the usual route for the Edmund Fitzgerald started in Duluth and went through the Sioux Locks, which is the transition to Huron.
Okay.
And then that takes you down to Detroit and Toledo. On Toledo on Lake Erie, you got to go through another little gate.
Mm-hmm.
So the Edmund Fitzgerald, when it was built, was the biggest, fastest, most ornate ship on the Great Lakes. It was the pride of the Great Lakes, and every sailor wanted to work on the Edmund Fitzgerald. They had an incredible chef So their meals three times a day were as good as any gourmet restaurant. They had the best captains. They had the best crew. They had the best quarters. They had TV on board, and they had so many things for the sailors to do. And it was just the best ship on the lakes. Mm. And nobody thought it could ever sink. But as he goes into detail about how the ship was constructed, it was constructed to move with the big waves of the Great Lakes. And during storms on the Great Lakes, the waves get really big. I never knew this. Bigger than saltwater waves, bigger than ocean waves. Now, you'll have some ocean waves in certain surfing spots that get, you know, 50 feet high and 60 feet high. But when there's no salt in the water and the Great Lakes are freshwater, the salt kind of weighs the waves down. But when they're just freshwater, they get really big and they get a little more out of control. And so during some of these big storms, like the one that sank the Edmund Fitzgerald, they could get 20, 25 feet high.
Dumb question. They didn't have weather radar to show, like, hey, this is a big storm. We should probably get this thing to the shore.
They had weather radar, but what they used to guide these ships and what the ships had on board was extremely crude and primitive.
Okay.
They were still going by lighthouses to find shore, and they had a radar that could tell where other ships were, but not really weather stuff.
Not to track storms.
They were
anything.
Relying on messages from shore, which got their info from the National Weather Service, which was looking at maps and satellites, and they were all predicting a big storm coming that night. Mm. But to jump ahead in the story, the Edmund Fitzgerald is on the Great Lakes for 20 years without problems. It's the greatest ship ever, and they've got the greatest captain, Ernest McSorley, who decided...
Sounds kind of fake.
...that November 10th...
Come on.
...was going to be his last run. He was retiring to take care of his ailing wife. His right-hand man, they were both in their early 60s. He had also decided, I'm going to retire with McSorley. And McSorley, everybody loved him. The sailors loved sailing for him. He was just a great captain. And, of course, with him at the helm and the indestructible Edmund Fitzgerald, nobody thought the ship could ever find any peril. Well, they knew a storm was coming, but they thought that they could outrace the storm. And I'm not going to give away all the details. It's 50 years old. You may know all the details, and many are in the book, of course. They start out, and they... Because it's a beautiful day. It's a perfect day when they start out. And so nobody thinks, well, this weather, it's for November. It's sunny and it's 60 and we're all wearing shorts and it's beautiful. And we're going to make this one final run of the season. And, of course, the author tells the story of every sailor. One guy has a pregnant girlfriend at home that he can't wait to get to. The other guy has this change that he collects every season that he takes home and gives his kids and they go buy toys. Mm-hmm. The other guy can't wait to get home to see his daughter go to her first dance. The other guy has, you know, they've all got these personal stories, and this is their last voyage of the season.
Oh, gosh.
So as they start going across Lake Superior, the weather starts to turn, and they're going in tandem with another boat because they think going with two boats would be safer. But McSorley is trying to race to get to the Sioux Locks first, to be the first one to deliver the iron ore because he's going to get a big bonus, and this big bonus is going to pay for his wife's health care for the year. So there's a lot at work here. And what ended up happening, the storm got so bad, the waves got so big, and the whole thing is a mystery because the Edmund Fitzgerald is still at the bottom of Lake Superior and nobody knows exactly what happened because none of the 29 on board survived. But what they think happened was just a combination of a lot of really bad things. And something I didn't realize, while everybody trusted McSorley, the captain, by the time they got to Whitefish Point Bay, which is where it sunk, 15 miles shy of that, McSorley had been awake for 24 hours trying to guide the ship through this storm. The ship had been being tossed about for 18 of those 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
And the author talks about not motion sickness, but that McSorley very likely had motion fatigue, that when you are being jostled about for 18 hours on a boat by 25-foot waves, you're not in your right mind.
Right.
So as a captain, he made a lot of decisions that normally he probably would not have made, and none of them were bad decisions, but they were decisions that ended up costing him. And so he wasn't captaining the right way. What should have happened, he and this other ship, they should have gone to safe harbor in some port, you know, 12 hours earlier.
Sure.
Or they should have sped up and taken the normal southern route to get ahead of the storm. But they thought that going the north route would protect them from the north winds, but it ended up delaying them, and so they ended up right in the middle of the storm. So you ended up in the middle of the storm with a really tired captain and a ship that was constructed to move and to bend, but not in 25-foot waves for 24 hours. So what they think happened is either some water started getting in through the hatches and started to slowly sink the ship because he reported a list at one point, or the ship just completely broke in half because it would bend and it was found in half on the bottom of the lake. Nobody's sure when that happened, though. That may have happened when they hit the bottom of the lake, because I think they said that the ship, once it sank with 26 tons of iron ore, probably was going hundreds of miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
And hit the bottom at an incredible speed. That may have been when it broke.
And they didn't have time to get on lifeboats, or they didn't have enough of them?
That's the other thing. One or two of the sailors had life vests on, but the lifeboats were still in place. I think one was crushed. They didn't have time for anything, so it happened very quickly. And the thought is, they probably all thought, we're on the Edmund Fitzgerald. It'll never sink. We have the best captain in the world. Yeah, we've got a list right now. We're taking on water, but we're 15 miles from Whitefish Point Bay. We'll still make it. So I don't think any of them expected that the ship was going to go down.
Like the Titanic type thing. This isn't going to happen.
Right. This can't sink. It is an incredible story. And then, so not only does he detail the ship's final hours, detail the theories about why it went down, but then after painting the picture of knowing all of these sailors and their personal lives, the aftermath, and Gordon Lightfoot is involved in the aftermath. He got to know all of these families very well. There's a memorial held every year, and he goes to it. And the families, all they are like family now. All of those 29 families have bonded. And so there's a little bit about the aftermath and the history. It's just a fascinating book. I'm working ahead this year. That was my April book of the month, The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald. I highly, highly recommend this. One of the best books I've read, and a book that made more of an impact on me than most that I have ever read.
Yeah, that's wild.
And by the way, at the urging of Bob Sturm, I'm now on Goodreads. I don't know what I'm doing there. I haven't listed all the books in order, but I've listed most or all of the books that I've read over the past 5 or 6 years when I've gotten back into reading. So you can follow me on there if you want to know which books I've read. I've done a poor job of producing the lists of all of these books of the month.
People love lists.
But people love lists. So I'm on Goodreads now. So that is The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald by John Bacon, my April book of the month. And now I look at that story and I listen to this song by Gordon Lightfoot completely differently. I'm telling you, I listened to it 20 times yesterday and now I love it.
It's haunting though, isn't it?
It's extremely haunting, but he wanted it to be haunting. And so that's, you know, I just always heard it. You know, the other weird thing about this, I'm telling you, I almost thought about doing our podcast on this week, because I could talk for 2 hours about the Edmund Fitzgerald. But another thing about the song, Gordon Lightfoot was surprised that it did so well on the Billboard charts, because it's just a story. There's no chorus.
It's a long song.
It's six and a half minutes.
Yeah, yeah. 6.5 minutes.
And that typically was not a hit maker in 1976.
No.
So just everything about it, all this tangential stuff around the shipwreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, just fascinating to me. And coming up next, we're going to talk to a sailing expert who knows the Great Lakes.
When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, fellas, it's too rough to feed you. At 7 p.m., a main hatchway gave in. He said, fellas, it's been good to know you. Captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. Later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.